people really like trusted me. And I had one moment where I was just like, if they trust me this much, why don't I trust me this much? So that was another first year lesson too. It's just like my first instinct is almost always the right one. If I have an idea and I believe in it, don't second guess it. Don't let people step in.
If you're new to the business of design and looking for some real life aha moments and lessons learned from a fellow design professional who's paying his dues and paying it forward, this podcast episode is for you. Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, we welcome Jordan Hackworth of J. Hackworth Interiors, based in Atlanta, Georgia. In this episode, Jordan shares his journey of design from the set of reality television in Hollywood to the launch of his own design business in 2020. Jordan learned many lessons in his first year of business, and he shares some of his most eye-opening realizations about his own strengths and weaknesses, the client experience, and the value of his local design community. Before we dive into our conversation with Jordan, I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, and a few new locations coming soon, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them that you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. Now on with our conversation with Jordan Hackworth. So Jordan, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you.
I know, it's finally good to talk to you.
Well, I don't know what took me so long to, I can't believe we're 80 episodes in plus, and I haven't had a designer from Atlanta, so that's crazy. So welcome.
I know, because Atlanta's pretty hopping, but thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, for sure. So you're representing Atlanta, so do them proud, Jordan.
I will try.
Well, we always start by talking a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself to kind of get the listeners up to speed. Who are you? Tell us a tiny bit about your design business, and then we'll dig in a little further as the conversation progresses.
All right. My name is Jordan. I am 37 years old. I live in Atlanta. I started J. Hackworth Interiors, my little design company, about a year and a half ago. I've been in the design world about 15 years about now. And I'm now on my own for the first time. So sort of like still on my launch pad, but doing pretty well with it.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. I specialize mostly in kitchen and bath remodels, but lately I've been branching out to various aspects of design, doing new construction and decor and stuff like that.
I remember the first year, the first 2 years, the first 3 years, so much learning happening, I bet.
Oh my God. Yeah. I spent the first year just like messing up left and right. So that was my year of learning. And then I pulled down, took it all as a lesson, decided that that was my design university moment, and just valued every mistake that I made and tried to turn it around.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to hop on the podcast, because, you know, we talk to all different types of designers. We talk to established designers that have been doing it for years. And we talk to designers just like you who, while you've been in the business for 15 years, just launching your business a year and a half ago aligns you with many, many of our listeners. There are a lot of designers out there who are listening who have just launched their business, and they're using this podcast and others as a source of inspiration and information. So I'm so glad that you said yes.
Yeah, no, I know. I was kind of like putting you off for a minute there, because I was like, I listened to your podcast and I'm like, these are really like seasoned professionals. I'm like, I'm kind of new. I'm sort of scrappy. I'm not like properly trained. So, but then I thought about it and I'm like, you know, if I'm listening to this and I hear someone who's in the same boat as me, that would be very comforting. So hopefully I can offer something.
Maybe a little.
story or two.
Let's put it all out there. So before you got involved in the interior design world, what was your background prior to that?
Well, I actually got my degree in writing and directing TV and film. I went straight to LA and interned a little bit, and I ended up getting into reality shows pretty early on because they were just booming at the time. It was an easy way to make money. So one of my first shows was an HGTV show that did one season. It was called First Time Design. And the concept of the show was basically like amateur designers from around the country would be flown in, and they would get the chance to meet with real clients and do one room in their house. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of on the story producing end of this. So my job was to basically take these theoretical designs and make them happen in almost unrealistic time expectations, and then make it like palatable for a home viewer. So it was a lot of moving parts. It was sort of a crash course in all the aspects of getting things done with various types of people doing various jobs and various schedules. And also just seeing like these transformations come to life. I mean, the cool thing about doing TV transformations is they happen so quickly. Yeah. I mean, it's not like my normal, you know, renovations that will take months. Like, we'll do something in like a week. So that was a fun part of it, but also very, very stressful. But, you know, I walked out of there being able to be the ringleader of, you know, a crazy circus of people and, you know, bringing really beautiful things to fruition.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like being on the production side was probably more valuable than being, I don't know, for lack of a better term, the contestant or featured designer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I mean, I've always been passionate about designs. Like you know, the classic story of every designer has of like, if we could take photos of every room, bedroom we've had throughout the years, it's like, that's our first canvas. And it's always, I've always been really passionate about it. Getting into the production side of it, like, that was really fun because I would work one-on-one with these, I guess you'd call them contestants. And, you know, I would have to like translate that and make their crazy ideas work. And then, you know, we would have like celebrity designers come in and mentor them and stuff. So I got to interact with them a lot. It was just an awesome experience. Yeah, but then I made a turn after that though.
You made a turn. All right. And what was that?
Well, so let's see. So I did a few design shows that became sort of my niche in that world. I went through a terrible breakup with my boyfriend at the time, who was an executive producer of a lot of those shows. And I sort of just like became reclusive. I ended up like backing out of the whole TV world. You know, I ended up just turning my my apartment into like a little workshop where I was just building furniture, you know, remodeling my apartment every other day, like just doing stuff like that. But it was also during the housing crash, and apartments were very cheap in LA. So I had some money saved up. I ended up subletting a bunch of apartments and basically, you know, making these just cool spaces that were very photographable. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I don't know if they still do this, but Airbnb would offer like free photography. Oh. So I was like, oh, this is great. I'll hire the photographers, come out, they make it look great with me. And then I have this like portfolio built up. So I had like 8 different apartments with all this cool photography. And I ended up doing really, really well with it. And I was in like the top 2% of Airbnb worldwide. Wow. Like I did really, really well with it. Then it took another turn when they ended up banning Airbnb from the city of West Hollywood. And like 7 of my places were in the city of West Hollywood.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was another hit. But you know, like even though it was like kind of like a dark time for me, and I was able to make money that way, I really was like honing a craft. Like that was the only thing I could do. I mean, I was professionally preparing, you know, everything else in my life was kind of like, you know, not going so well, but all these things added up to something great. So ended up like bailing on these like 7 apartments and came back home to Atlanta where I'm from, and just decided to like totally start clean, totally refresh and totally reboot. So I got a job doing free design services at a tile shop. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I had a pretty solid following of other designers, contractors, builders, and customers who would come in, and they started to, you know, just throw their spaces at me and say, here, design this room, this room, and this room. After a while, I was like confident enough that I'm like, all right, so why is this interior designer coming in here and getting free services from me, but I'm the one who's doing all of it? So pandemic hit, and then I decided that was my moment to just step off the cliff and just try something on my own. And I've done pretty well since then. I mean, like it was a good time to do it because everyone was sitting at home looking at their places, wanting to renovate them.
Oh yeah.
I built up enough of like a following that people stayed in touch with me. And things have just been growing ever since then.
That's awesome. Yeah. The last year and a half is definitely a good time to get into the business of design because there is so much opportunity out there. And I like that realization that you had about, you know, hey, listen, I'm already designing for other designers, why don't I just design for myself and my own clients, which I think is an epiphany that a lot of designers have. But I 100% respect your journey to that point. You know what I mean? Going back to the television production, when we spoke originally, you had called yourself a producer by nature. And I really like that term because, you know, even now, with the design that you're doing, you are a producer, you know, you're still following all of those same steps and probably very similar strategies that you were following back on the set in Los Angeles, trying to make these designs come to fruition for television.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's actually quite a bit easier because we don't have to worry about TV time and unions, but yeah, I mean, I still like if I'm presenting something to a client and I have a vision that has to be achieved, I have to make sure everybody's on point. I come at it originally from like a creative aspect, and then I merge right into like a technical aspect, making sure the right people are on the job, making sure everything is instructed properly, that there's a clear pathway to where we want to go, backup plans, all that stuff, and just being able to communicate with different types of people. And to be able to, you know, parent my clients while this is happening, because it's always it's a stressful situation for them, especially if they're coming out of like a leak from a bathroom or something. So I'm good at like wearing a lot of hats at one time. So, and I think that that's from producing. I don't think I could have done that without that experience.
Yeah, I think that everyone should look back on previous experiences and kind of leverage that in their design business. A lot of designers tend to discount, you know, that previous experience. And I always come from a place of, hey, what did you do before? What did you learn? Because chances are you're going to be able to apply that to the business of design, and it's going to benefit you in one or many ways, in this case, substantially.
Sure. Yeah, no, I would not trade it in for the world. Like I said, it was a hard 10 or so years, but you know, it led up to this and I couldn't be happier. So it was all very valuable. I take it all as good lessons.
So you said you spent your first year messing up. And I think that we can definitely all relate to that. What were some of the biggest challenges or lessons learned in your first year of design?
Working with clients directly is a different animal. And I hadn't been used to that. I'm working with teams and people who are constructing something. Working with individuals, especially if they haven't been through a renovation before, and I guess in a term, setting boundaries with them. That was something that I was not aware that I was going to have to be prepared for. I really, you know, I was coming from a place of really having a lot of zeal to do these, you know, fantastic projects and stuff. And I really wanted them to have a good experience with it. When I was working at the tile store and I had clients just walking in, a lot of the walk-ins were like a husband and wife, and they don't agree on anything. So I was like half marriage counselor and, you know, half designer. So learning to deal with people in that sense was new for me, but I realized that I had a knack for it. Like people just, I have an easy time working with people. And you know, after being reclusive for like 10 years, I was sort of like, hey, and like, you know, had a great time, you know, just engaging with people again. So, but at the same time, when I was giving that much of myself, people were taking twice as much. And that's something that I have to watch. I still want to like engage with clients in a really personalized way, and make sure that they have like a really tailored good experience. But man, if I could tell my former self one thing, it's like, don't let them take advantage of you, you know, respect your own work. You know, that was hard to gauge the first year for sure.
That is such a huge lesson. And a dear friend and design colleague of mine always said, don't mistake my kindness for weakness. And that right. was his way of reminding himself and sometimes relaying to clients his boundaries, you know, because yeah. you're right. You know, we're naturally people pleasers and we do want to make the client experience amazing, but there's limits. What about on the business side of design? Were there any particular challenges or are there any particular challenges that you're struggling with or that you've overcome that you think other designers could benefit hearing your story?
Yeah, you can never get organized too early on. That was something that I was not really paying attention to. I was so involved with, you know, the look of everything and really ignoring like that I had to keep my finances in order and make sure that these bank accounts were like collecting the right amount of money, that I was setting aside money for taxes, like all of that stuff. It was kind of like a pile of papers. And that's still hard. I mean, that kind of stuff is still, I mean, the best thing I ever did was hire a bookkeeper and have my CPA and like make sure that they are on track and watching me, because I'm not good at watching myself when it comes to finances. But yeah, that was very difficult at first. It took a long time to clean it up.
So are you a one-man show? Do you have an assistant? Do you have a small team, or how does that work?
No, I kind of, at this point, I'm able to still be a one-man show. And I kind of enjoy that because I can focus on things I want to focus on and like, you know, not have to like worry about anybody else. But at some point I am going to have to branch off and sort of delegate. But yeah, right now it's working.
And keep in mind that, you know, outsourcing, there's absolutely nothing wrong with outsourcing. And it's something that a lot of designers are doing now, because I feel like as we're all talking more about our businesses as design professionals, we're also talking about our strengths and weaknesses. And not everyone is like a born leader and should lead a team of 2 or 10 or 20 people. Some people just aren't cut out for it. And that's okay. You know what I mean? So if you don't want to manage a team and add to your responsibilities, there's ways to outsource all types of things. I've talked to incredible designers who are, as I would say, one-man shows, but with an extended team of many. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I see it too. And the thing is like what happens to me that gives me anxiety is like, I'll be with a client and I realize that they expect me to know everything about everything from how to install tile properly to like how to arrange flowers properly. And I'm like, whoa, there's like a lot of in between here. And like, listen, I'm creative and stuff and I know how to get things done, but holy moly, like I can't like have my brain wrapped around your textiles while I'm doing your like shower. I mean, it's a lot. And I want to be able to answer all those questions. I want to be a one-stop shop for clients to go all the way through. And it's working so far, but yeah, at some point this bubble's going to pop and I'm going to have to like bring other people on to make this a well-functioning machine.
Well, and I'm a strong believer in that we can't know everything, because I've been in that place and I remember the anxiety associated with always wanting to have an answer. Right. And then someone taught me that it was perfectly okay to say, I don't have that answer, but I'm going to go and get it for you. Because at the end of the day, your client, that's what they really want. Rather than a bullshit answer that they're going to see right through, they'd rather you go back and do your homework and bring them a legit answer. And that just, it's satisfying your client and it's showing them that you're resourceful and that you're able to get the answers. You know what I mean? I think that's a really good approach.
For sure. I mean, transparency is really important. They have to trust me at the end of the day. And that was a first year mistake too, is like, don't have to have an answer for everything. You can just not answer for a minute until you figure it out. Like, it's a people pleasing thing. It's just like, you know, you want to give them what they want immediately, but sometimes, you know, you want to make sure things are lined up appropriately before you open your mouth.
Completely, completely. So I want to go back a second to the work that you did in the showroom. And I just want to ask, like, what, during that time when you came back to Atlanta and you were like, okay, I'm going to go work in this tile showroom, did you think about going to design school, or did you feel like the lessons that you learned in production were enough coupled with the experience in the showroom to just hit the ground running?
Well, I was cautious about it. And I did entertain the idea of going to design school, thought about it. And after, you know, like a year and a half of working there and working so closely with people doing construction and people coming in and trying to problem solve things that are going wrong, I really felt like my technical skills were on point. Mm-hmm. And I've always trusted my, you know, designing is in my gut. Like that's something I know is fine, even though I might not always like, you know, have the right terminology for things. Like the thoughts are there, the visualization is there, and I can communicate it in a proper way. But when I started, yeah, I mean, of course, like I'll always have like a little bug in me that will doubt everything I do. But for, you know, for the most part, I was confident enough to just go ahead and do it.
Right. Right.
I mean, people really like trusted me. And I had one moment where I was just like, if they trust me this much, why don't I trust me this much? So that was another first year lesson too. It's just like my first instinct is almost always the right one. If I have an idea and I believe in it, don't second guess it. Don't let people step in. I mean, when I was working at the showroom, I had like this really important client who had randomly texted me and asked me like something about paint colors for a bathroom that I did. And she was sending me all the different whites. It was 2019. So white was the only option. And and then I like had one of my coworkers step in, who's like a really good designer. And she was like, oh no, you have to do this, this, and this. And it was like a French blue. And I was like, okay. And I just texted those colors. And that lady never spoke to me again. Oh. And she just wrote back. She goes, huh? ? And I was like, oh no, that was the last time I let anyone guide me outside of my original vision. I was like, forget it. No, that's not happening anymore.
That is such a good story. Thank you for sharing that. And I love what you just said when you said, if they trust me this much, why don't I trust me this much? I think we should all be asking ourselves that question and, you know, go with our gut and go with our instinct. I didn't mean to put you on the spot about going to school because, you know, the design community is all over the place. There's tons of incredibly talented design professionals who have never gone to school. And it's something that we talk about all the time. And I think that if you have the competence, you know, this other side of the coin, the organizational skills, the production skills, the ability to interact with your clients and fulfill these designs, you know, you're more than halfway there. You're three quarters of the way there. And anything that you may have learned in school that you're missing, it's never too late to go back for. So I hate it when people get hung up on school. I'm an advocate of design school, but I don't think anyone should get hung up on it.
Well, yeah. And the other thing I learned from, you know, getting a degree in TV and film was that in 4 years, I'm not sure what I learned, but when I went out and made a movie and when I went out and worked on a TV show, that's when I learned everything. Yep. So I sort of, you know, lined it up with that and let that be sort of like the reason that I'm okay with it about not having a degree in design. I'm like, you know what? I've done the degree thing and I'm not sure that it got me as far as I needed it to go. So it's just the hands-on stuff that I've really learned everything from.
So now that you're a year and a half into your business and you've got it all figured out, what does the future of your business look like? What do you foresee?
I'm starting on new construction projects that are a little bit more, they're just scaled up a little bit. And I want to keep scaling up in that direction. I don't know. I want to keep, honestly, if I stayed the same right now and just was like a little bit more organized and had a little bit more help, it would probably be fine. But you know, I've been scaling up and I'm enjoying having, bigger budgets, which is much nicer. Trust, if I can keep my clients who trust me fully, that would be fantastic. I mean, things are going really well right now. So if the projection stays the same, I'll be happy.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about the design community in Atlanta. How has the design community there embraced the concept of community over competition? Do you feel that you have a good support system among your peers and colleagues in the design community there?
Atlanta's awesome. I mean, one thing that got me to where I am right now that I have to give a lot of credit to is there was a Facebook group, the Atlanta Design and Contractor Community. And it's just this Facebook group. There's like 35,000 people on it. And it's just a way that people can post stuff and get, you know, advice and referrals. And when I first started, And, you know, I hadn't even been in Atlanta for years and years and years. And I would need someone on the fly who would, you know, be able to like supply me with, you know, countertops or a fabricator or something like that. I would reach out and just ask the question. It was overwhelming. I would get like dozens and dozens of responses and messages saying like, here's my guy, here's his number, he's amazing. And I was just picking up the phone and making a lot of calls that way. I have no idea without that group how I would have ever met the best contractors or, you know, whoever, unless I was doing like Angie's List or something horrible like that, where I'm just like finding these like whoever people. Yeah. But the, but being able to like get references for people and reach out in that way is awesome. I also feel like there is between us, there's, I feel like everyone has their own angle. No matter how many designers I see, it seems like everyone has their one thing that they do really, really well, or a style that works really, really well for them and that they just stick with, or a structure to their business that works really well. I feel like we all offer something different. We're all staying busy right now. So no, I don't feel like there's a competitive aspect that much. And yeah, I feel totally supported. I don't know how I would have done it without the people around here.
It's amazing to hear. It's exactly what we're striving for. And I'm so glad to hear that that concept is trickling down in all markets. That makes me very, very happy.
And I'm grateful for people like you who bring it all together and make a show out of it. I mean, it's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're grateful for people like you who are willing to share, because you're doing exactly what other designers did for you and are doing for you. So it's a full circle moment here.
Cheers.
So we have a couple of signature questions here at the podcast, and whether you've been in business for, you know, 10 minutes or 10 years, I think everyone can shed some light on these questions and inform and inspire the listeners, starting with, you know, what would you say is your secret to survival? And, you know, just because you've only professionally launched your business a year and a half ago, you've been in the biz for a good long time, and you've seen what it takes. What would you say is the secret to your survival at this point?
Number one thing is like my relationship with clients has to stay number one. Full transparency, which I know is kind of a dirty word sometimes in the world of design, is really important to me. I find that like the more transparency there is, the more they trust me and the more comfortable we are, we get to a better point in the end. I do make some sacrifices for that, but like, you know, it gets us to where we're going. Like I said, like the first year setting boundaries is really important. Valuing my work, not treating myself like a bargain basement, you know, like not, you know, undercutting my prices or whatever. And I guess like, you know, keeping the work at the forefront of my mind, like, you know, we're all like selling a brand, we're selling a lifestyle and an image. And like, that's something that I have to like project. And that's part of the job, I guess. But keeping in mind that like the actual work is what's important is super valuable. I mean, like it looks fancy on Instagram, but in real life, it's dirty work boots and like paint in my hair, you know, it's like, so anyway, getting gritty and like, you know, keeping the work first is probably how I've stayed afloat.
Awesome. And what would you say is the one thing that you know now that you wish you knew then? And I'm going to say, when I say then, I'm going to say a year and a half ago when you launched your design business.
Well, that's a tough question for me because it's everything I messed up is what I'm great at now. So I wouldn't tell myself anything except like, trust the process, go for it.
There you go. I like that. Just take the leap.
Yeah, just go for it.
You're so right. I think that, you know, mistakes and failures are learning opportunities. And it's interesting that you say those are the things that you're actually good at now, because they were in your face and you were forced and challenged to excel at those things and not make that mistake again.
Yeah, for sure.
Love that. And how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Well, hopefully doing stuff like this. I don't know. I kind of like, now I'm back on that advice referral page and I'm sort of just, you know, spend my free time doling out other advice. And like, there's no call I won't answer. You know, I by nature, I like to help people out. If I see someone like having an issue with something, like I will pull my people and send them over there and do whatever it takes. You know, I want to see everybody succeed. So
I love that. Exactly. Jordan, you're so one of us. Welcome to the tribe.
Thanks. Hey, good to be here.
So Jordan, how can we learn more about you? What is your website? How can we find you on Instagram?
My Instagram handle is jhackworthinteriors. My website is jhackworthinteriors.com. Pretty straightforward. That's pretty much all I got. Instagram and my website.
Well, I really appreciate you having this conversation with us and just kind of touching on, you know, your journey and, you know, some of your trials and errors along the way and what you learned from them. And, you know, that's really going to impart some great words of wisdom and advice to other people who are launching their businesses. So I really appreciate you sharing.
Of course. Thank you for what you do. And I'm glad to be here. This was awesome.
Awesome. Take care, man.
All right. You too.
I'm so grateful that Jordan agreed to be a part of the podcast, and I truly appreciate that he shared his journey and experiences so honestly and freely. I've received a few requests from listeners to feature more designers who are new to the biz and who are in the trenches getting it done. I was actually shocked to hear that Jordan has only been in business since 2020 during our discovery call. And when we started talking about lessons learned and overcoming the challenges of entrepreneurship, I just knew that we had to continue the conversation on the podcast. I think my biggest takeaway from my conversation with Jordan was his reference to trusting himself as much as his clients trust him. We all waste so much time second-guessing ourselves, and what we really need to do is get out of our own way and go with our gut. In the business of design, confidence is our currency. So stand your ground, push boundaries, and trust your instincts. If you love this podcast episode, please share with a friend or colleague. If you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to leave a review. That really helps boost our visibility on the platform to reach more design professionals just like you. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.